It's a never-ending debate here in Sacramento around the draft time, best fit versus best player available. And we're going to take that debate to a national perspective as I'm joined by Aaron Torres from Fox Sports Radio and the Aaron Torres Podcast. He does a phenomenal job covering all college athletics year-round. I had him on last year around the draft. Happy to have him back this year. Again, we're talking about best fit, best player available. He's going to give us a lot of insight on Shaedon Sharpe and the mystery surrounding him, plus so much more on the Locked On Kings podcast.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome into Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all offseason. If you're looking for in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, interviews with local and national experts, full coverage of your Sacramento Kings from January all the way through to December, this is the place for you, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. This will be my ninth season covering Kings basketball. I'm in year five hosting Locked On Kings, and I currently work for ABC 10 News in Sacramento. Last year, Aaron Torres around this time joined me. We talked about what the Kings were going to do in last year's draft with the ninth overall pick. We did not discuss Davion Mitchell really much at all, as that was a surprise pick for the Kings, but had a lot of good conversation last year that those who listened last year seemed to really, really enjoy his insight and perspective. So I absolutely had to have him back here on Locked On Kings. A lot last week, I had a lot of local perspective just on yesterday's Locked On Kings. I did a podcast with the Duke beat writer. So you can get those local perspectives on different prospects that the Kings could be interested in. I've talked to an Iowa beat writer about Keegan Murray, talked to a Purdue beat writer about Jaden Ivey, a Duke beat writer about both Paolo Banchero and AJ Griffin. I'm going to be doing more local beat writers for more local perspectives, but a lot of national draft analysts are going to be joining me, and college basketball analysts are going to be joining me this week, beginning with Aaron Torres. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. A lot to respond to. Pay a lot of attention to what he has to say about drafting for talent versus fit, and pay a lot of attention to what he has to say about Shaedon Sharpe. Some really interesting background and information as to why Sharpe didn't play for Kentucky and play his freshman year in college. Take a listen. I hope you enjoy my conversation. If you want to respond to anything, you can do so on Twitter at MattGeorgeSack. Email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com, or leave your thoughts in the YouTube comment section down below. But for right now, please enjoy my conversation with Aaron Torres. I've been happy to give you a lot of local perspective with different college beat writers here on Locked On Kings, but now it's time for some national perspective of this NBA draft as a whole. And here to help me do that, welcoming back Aaron Torres from Fox Sports Radio. Aaron was on with me last year covering the draft. I don't think either of us necessarily talked about Davion Mitchell ending up a Sacramento King, but lo and behold, that's who the Kings ended up taking. Aaron also hosts his podcast, the Aaron Torres Pod. Aaron, it's a pleasure to have you back on, my man. This is a position that I did not expect the Sacramento Kings to be in at the fourth spot. The first question I want to ask you right out the gate, your reaction to seeing the Kings move up. The Kings moved up in a major way in 2018-2. We all know how that panned out. That was their really first chance of changing this franchise around, and they blew it. Moving up to four, even though this is kind of considered like a top three heavy draft, do you think this is a franchise altering possibility for the Kings?
Well, no, I don't think there's anybody, you know, that is franchise altering, but you know, the draft is what it is at this point, and I love college basketball, but these guys are so young, you just never know what you're going to get. I mean, I never anticipated Trae Young being as good as he was. I don't mean to bring up 2018. You know, not that Trae Young was probably a guy that was on the big board anyway. You know, I had never seen Luka Doncic in person, but never could have imagined that he would be this good. I liked Ja Morant. I didn't think he would be making the case as the best player in the NBA by year two. So I don't see a franchise changing guy at number four, but like I said, I just listed off three or four guys there that have already exceeded my expectations. And those were all guys that I did like coming in. Certainly John, Trae Young for sure. So no, I don't think so. But what I do think is there's a lot of really good players. I do think to something that you said, Matt, I'm not, you know, critiquing your words. I do think there's this perception that there's a clear top three. I don't necessarily feel that way. And so because of it, you know, I think, especially in year one, I think Jaden Ivey could be productive in year one in a way that Chet Holmgren won't be. I think Keegan Murray could be productive in a way that maybe Jabari Smith isn't. So I just bring it up to say I think there's going to be really good players at number four. I don't think that a Kings fan has to pray that one of those top three fall. Otherwise, it will be a wasted night. I think the draft, you know, in terms of superstar power, I don't necessarily know that it's there. Like I said a minute ago, I've been wrong on a lot of these guys before. But at the same time, I do think there's some really good players throughout the sprinkled really throughout that top 10.
Oh, I love that, Aaron. I love that a lot because one of the things that makes this draft so fun for me is the fact that there really isn't a consensus number one or even number two overall. It's not like a Zion Williams draft of a couple of years ago, right? Where it's like, okay, we know Zion's going number one. And the rest is kind of up to everybody else type thing. Like anybody can, and you look at different mock drafts. One has Jabari Smith Jr. going to Orlando. One has Chet Holmgren going to Orlando. The Locked On Magic host picked Paolo Banchero in our mock draft to go to Orlando. Like it's completely up in the air with those, again, big three names to, for the most part, see at the top of the draft. For you personally, though, you're in charge of Orlando. Is there a consensus in your mind or a guy that's like, yeah, I'm definitely taking him? Or would it come down to like draft day for you to really make that decision?
Well, for me, not knowing what, you know, I don't know how big Orlando's fan base is at this point. But I said the night of the draft that I don't think that this team that has had seven top 10 picks since 2013, has not won a playoff series since 2010. I don't think you can take the developmental guy with the number one pick. I mean, I know that you want to draft the long-term superstar, the guy that's going to elevate your franchise, but I think it's going to be a tough sell to say, hey, this guy could be good for us 3 years down the road. And so to echo the sentiment of your Locked On Magic guy or girl, I don't know if it's what the Magic will do, but I'd take Paolo Banchero. I would, because I just look at most advanced skill set. You know, obviously was the most productive college player, won the most out of the three. I know Chet obviously had the best record, but whatever. The point is, winner, skill sets advanced, made a Final Four. Here's the other thing, too, about Paolo that I'll say is that I think there's this belief that he's pretty close to his ceiling. And I'm not going to say that he's certainly closer to his ceiling, I would suspect, than Jabari Smith or Chet Holmgren. But as somebody who's seen Paolo a lot throughout his high school career, I've seen him evolve even in the last 3 to 4 years, where he was kind of this kid that grew at a young age, was about 6'8", 6'9", after his freshman, sophomore year of high school, and was deemed kind of a low post player. And I remember talking to people close to him after his sophomore year during kind of that COVID pause when nobody was really doing much, saying, oh, we're in the gym right now because people think that Paolo's already kind of, you know, kind of hit his ceiling as this low post player. And that is where the mid-range game, that is where the taking people off the dribble, the little, you know, two dribble pull up, the 3-point shot, that is where it all evolved, was during that COVID pause when a lot of other people were kind of staying at home. They found a way to get into the gym and get better. So I'm not saying that that the other guys don't probably have more untapped upside at this point, but I think the idea that Paolo Banchero is a finished product and can't get any better than he already is, I don't know that I buy that either.
I don't know if I could buy that for any rookie who hasn't played a single second in the NBA yet, but I mean, I guess there are safer picks than others. It's very interesting because conversations that I've had, people that I've talked to, out of the three, that top three, who is most likely to fall, Paolo has been the name that's been brought up more than anybody else. And a recent conversation that I had on yesterday's Locked On Kings podcast was joined by a Duke beat writer. And I talked about, like, what if Paolo fell to the Kings at four? Would they just absolutely have to take him? Or could they consider going in a different direction? Could they consider letting him slide to five? Do they try and shop him to a team that's maybe desperate to acquire him, like a Detroit or Indiana? That's a pick or two behind you. So it's really interesting. If you're saying like Paolo is that guy at the top for you, who would you say is the more likely in your mind to fall to the Kings at four?
It's a great question, Matt, because what I would do doesn't seem to be the early sentiment. And this is, you know, it's going to change as we go through whatever physical, you know, physicals that we can get, medicals, whatever, one-on-one individual workouts. But I'm with you. It seems to me that no one is concerned about Chet, the lack of size, but the lack of strength, the lack of, you know, physicality, all that stuff. And obviously Jabari Smith's skill set speaks for itself. So, you know, what I would say is, I think two things can be true is what I would do is completely independent of what appears to be going on. And so to your question, I do think it feels like, just from the intel that I got out of Chicago last week, all the reports that we all read out of Chicago last week, is it does feel like Paolo is the one that's most likely to fall. And I think it's crazy, but that's what it feels like to me. So does that mean that things can't change? Does it mean that Chet maybe underwhelms, or Jabari Smith underwhelms, or questions as you get these kids more one-on-one start to emerge? I think there could potentially be some with Jabari Smith, just in terms of how much does he do on his own versus needing other guys to do stuff for him, even at 6'10". So I'm just bringing it up to say, I think right now it feels like Paolo's that guy to fall. But as we know, there's still about 5 weeks left in this draft process, and a lot can change over those 4 or 5 weeks.
Where do you stand in the fit versus best player available draft debate? Because it is raging in Sacramento right now.
Well, I you know, it's so interesting, because I think now in the world that we live in, with the players leaving college so young, and I love college hoops, but I'm a realist in what the college process is for most players. It's get in and then get out as fast as you can. I think in most cases you probably have to take the high upside guy, because I mean, how many guys really do step in right away and contribute in a spot of need? Now, some guys like Cade Cunningham can't miss. You know, Evan Mobley, I would argue, jumped in a spot of need. Obviously, Scotty Barnes was the rookie of the year. So it's not to say guys can't do it. But I think for the most part, you just got to go upside. Now, if you love a guy at a certain position, I don't think that you draft the duplicate or the same position. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, somebody at the top of the draft that has a guy that they love. I don't know. Like, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. So, like, and I know De'Aaron Fox has been up and down, but if De'Aaron Fox was putting up, Ja Morant numbers, if somehow Memphis had traded and they ended up in the second, third pick, then that's one where I would say, don't take Jaden Ivey. Don't take Shaedon Sharpe, somebody like that. But for the most part, I think every organization is a little bit different. You have to balance, you know, short term, be able to step in, long-term upside, fit right now versus where they could be down the road. But in general, I would say I'm the take the best guy, because these guys are so young. You never know who's going to hit. You never know who's going to miss. I'll give you another example that pops to my head. I don't remember which order it was, but I remember when Cleveland took Colin Sexton and Darius Garland in back-to-back years. I thought that was crazy. They clearly seemed to have figured out a way to have it work with both of them. But both those guys were so young when they came in. It's kind of like it's like high school football, right? You put the ones versus the ones, and you let them go to battle and see who's better, you know? And that's kind of the vibe that I got out of Cleveland, was we're just going to take both these guys, and maybe they can play together, maybe they can't. But if one of the two really pops, then we got ourselves a good lead guard. So I don't know if that really answered your question. It went in a lot of different directions, Matt. But my answer is, in general, unless you feel totally confident in who you have at one particular spot, I would just take the guy that you believe has the highest upside or the most talented, in terms of that.
It would seem that Kings general manager Monty McNair agrees with you for the most part, because the first move he did when he was hired as the general manager of the Kings, he gives Fox the max, which people would argue he had to do. And then his first two drafts, he takes two ball handling guards in Tyrese Halliburton and Davion Mitchell. Now, Tyrese is no longer a part of the team. He's now in Indiana. The Kings get Domantas Sabonis. But in both those drafts, best player available argument over fit. And drafting for fit has gotten the Kings in trouble in the past. And I recognize that wholeheartedly. However, this year feels a little bit different for me. Like, I'm more leaning on the side of fit versus best player available because of the circumstances that the Kings are in. Essentially, it's been reported the Kings basically have a playoff mandate this year. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they have 2 years to basically convince Domantas Sabonis to re-sign. And the best way to do that is to get them in the playoffs and actually win some damn basketball games. Plus, the Kings don't want the playoff streak to go to 17 years at this point in time. Enough is enough here. So that's why I love a guy like a Keegan Murray so much, because Murray, I can see fitting almost perfectly next to a Domantas Sabonis right away. He checks all those boxes to fill that four hole, spaces the floor, helps defensively, maybe a bit undersized, could play the three, could play the four. Some Harrison Barnes comparisons there, more of a wing and less of like a power forward necessarily compared to like a Banchero or a Jabari Smith Jr. But that's why I'm so interested in fit potentially with the Kings for this draft. But I wonder if, like in the case of Paulo falling to you, or in general, if Jaden Ivey's there and you think he has a higher upside than a Keegan Murray, I wonder if it's really better for the Kings to say, you know what, we're just going to take the best talent now and just try and figure it out. Domantas Sabonis' contract to be damned.
Well, two things jump to mind, and not knowing the organization nearly as well as you, I mean, I think the need versus fit makes sense, and it shows the value of just taking the best available player, because then if it works out, it's always a potential trade piece, like with Tyrese Halliburton, right? I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
You don't get Domantas Sabonis without having Halliburton and having drafted him. The other thing I would say too about Keegan Murray is, you know, I think it's kind of a best of both worlds, because, you know, Keegan Murray is a very interesting story from the perspective that I'm sure you have talked about it on this show, but a lot of people forget, like, this wasn't McDonald's All-American, can't miss, one and done. I mean, he came to Iowa and he played behind a National Player of the Year in Luka Garza. Now, who has the better upside over the next 10 years? It's certainly Keegan Murray, but I bring it up to say he's a guy that I think is going to be comfortable stepping into a role as a rookie. And we talk a lot about, you know, some of those guys that I mentioned, Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham, all those guys. The bottom line is most of these guys at the top of the class, they've been the best player every place they've ever played. Everywhere they go, they expect to have stuff run for them. And I'm not talking in, you know, a negative light, but at the same time, I think there's something to be said. A guy like Keegan Murray that is very comfortable playing a role, doesn't need stuff run for him, isn't going to be bent out of shape if only he only gets, you know, two or three shots in a game. Now, obviously, you'd hope to get more from him, but that was kind of the role that he played at Iowa in year one. And then he also proved, by the way, that he could evolve, that he could develop, that you know, when he got more comfortable, he could be a guy that you lean on and a guy that kind of takes over games and becomes a superstar. So to me, I think that's another thing as well, is there's a lot of guys that have been the star every step of their lives and just aren't comfortable being that role-playing guy. And to your point, the Kings are obviously a lot further along in terms of veterans and established players and role definition than, say, Oklahoma City or Houston or whatever. And so to me, that's where I think a Keegan Murray could be really interesting. Like you said, if Paolo's there, if Jabari Smith is there, it raises a whole other question altogether. But if the draft kind of goes to plan, I can absolutely see the argument that you're making, Matt, especially for this specific player who, again, is not going to be a rookie that day one steps in and thinks things need to revolve around him, because that's just never the player that he's been.
Today's episode of Locked On Kings brought to you by Prize Picks, the best way to play daily fantasy NBA. Fantasy sports sometimes can get a little tedious, right? They can get a little bit taxing, especially fantasy basketball, where seemingly you have to change your lineups day in and day out. Prize Picks makes it so much easier for you. It's the best way to play daily fantasy NBA. It's daily fantasy really made easy. The way it works is you pick 2 to 5 players and an over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus the projected numbers. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that simple. Prize Picks are safe. They offer fast withdrawals. You can use their award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. And again, you pick 2 to 5 players, and you can pick any prop that you can think of, from like points scored to rebounds, even steals. You pick an over-under, and you make money if you are correct. Prize Picks also allows mixed sport entries, so it's not just basketball. You can enjoy betting on the NBA Eastern and Western Conference Finals right now with Prize Picks, while also playing MLB fantasy. And they have so much more than just those two sports: college basketball, college football, NFL, MLB, soccer, MMA, and so much more. For a limited time, Prize Picks is an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all Locked On Kings listeners. You can get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Pick entry scores just a single point. But if you use promo code Locked On, or rather if you just use promo code NBA, you have the ability to win that. So again, you have to use promo code NBA to get $50 if a player in your first entry scores a single point, it's that easy. Make sure you're playing Daily Fantasy the way it was meant to be played and the most fun and easy way possible with Prize Picks. Shaedon Sharpe fascinates me and terrifies me. I mean, we've seen the high school mixtape, sexy ball handling ability, sexy scoring ability. The upside is there. He's such a young, raw prospect. Doesn't necessarily make sense for the Kings timeline, but if it's there's a best player argument, highest ceiling argument, he certainly is in that conversation. A lot of Kings fans love the idea. People like me, I'm interested, but I'm very tentatively so. Where are you at with the risk and reward factor of Shaedon Sharpe, who didn't play a single second, even though he's coming out of Kentucky?
First of all, I want to correct something you said. You said, I am fascinated but terrified by him, or something to that effect. It's not you. It's literally everyone in basketball that is both terrified and fascinated by him. And I'll tell you, you know, there's a lot of people, even at the college level, that I think are like just genuinely curious. And listen, you know, we throw around these cliches of man of mystery and what do we really know? Like, this kid, we say that every year in the draft. This kid is that, though. You know, the summer before what should have been his junior year but was ultimately his senior year, AAU is canceled because of COVID. Kind of breaks out during the summer after COVID when it's limited people in the stands and limited scout availability and all that stuff. And obviously we know the rest as he went to Kentucky. And what I would say is a couple things stand out to me with him is that one, I think from the NBA team's perspectives, you got to figure out, you got to get you got to wrap your head around what actually happened in Kentucky. Now, my understanding is, I could be mistaken, but the owner of the Kings, Vivek, I think he's actually pretty close with John Calipari. That's where some of these rumors have floated around through the years. If you're going to take Shaedon Sharpe, you know, you take John Calipari out for a few glasses of wine and you get the real story on what happened there, because even people like myself who cover it, who know people close to the situation, it's hard to separate fact from fiction. Did he, you know, there's differing reports that he wanted to play and the adults in his life wouldn't let him. There are differing reports that Calipari was ready to put him out there. There was differing reports that he was never going to go out there. By the way, even when he played, was kind of a guy that was so physically and naturally gifted that would turn it on and turn it off. And by the way, that happens a lot with high school kids that are significantly better than their peers. And so, you know, that would be my only piece of advice to not only any Kings front office, but literally anybody who's interested in drafting him. You got to get to the bottom of what happened to Kentucky. Was it him? Was it the camp? You know, as somebody who is around the high school AAU scene a little bit more than most, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of times where there's adults pulling the strings behind the scenes with a lot of these kids. And I think this was unfortunately one of those cases where my understanding, my belief is that he wanted to play. I think Kentucky was ready to throw him out there, and the adults could kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel and say exactly what we're talking about now, Matt, is it's better to keep him as a mystery, because if he comes out and doesn't perform, then we're going to either have to come back, we're going to have to do this, we're going to have to do that. So I'm not saying he can't be the guy. I am as intrigued as you are. I think, like I said a minute ago, I think everybody in basketball is intrigued by this kid, what his ceiling could potentially be. I just, like I said, you got to get behind the scenes and what really happened in Kentucky, who was making the decisions, what does it say about the kid? By the way, are these adults going to be super hands-on when he gets to the pros? Are they going to back off? Like, those are the questions that you need to be asking about Shaedon Sharpe right now.
Is it the mystery that's so alluring and appealing for fans and scouts and teams, or does he really have as high of a star ceiling based off of a high school mixtape that people, I mean, he was at one point expected to be the number one overall pick or the top prospect in the 2023 NBA draft. Like, what is really the ceiling for Shaedon Sharpe? Is it that big, or is it more the mystery that has him so high in the lottery?
Well, it's kind of a combination of both, right? There's mystery because nobody's seen him play live games, but what you do have available is like, wow, like you can just see in the, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. You can see in the layup lines why he's such an exciting prospect in terms of his burst and his pop and his leaping ability and things like that. And so to me, that's what it is it's kind of a combination of the mystery with the fact that he hasn't played. I mean, listen, what is the biggest cliche in sports? You know, in college football, the most popular kid on campus is the backup quarterback, right? And I think this is an extreme example of that, where You don't really know. And if he had gone out there, you know, maybe a little bit of that bloom comes off the rose. And if anything, that would maybe be a little bit of my concern. And I don't know though, right? So like, I'm not saying this is the truth. I'm just saying, I don't know. Was he held out? Because the buzz out of Kentucky was that there was a point Kentucky had a bunch of injuries. They were ready to throw this guy into the fire, and the adults in his world, you know, didn't allow that to happen, for lack of a better term. So the question becomes, was it because they didn't feel like he was ready? Was it because they felt like it was going to any negative, you know, the best way to get drafted the highest was not to play at all? Or did they just know, like I just said a second ago, that he wasn't ready, that he was going to get exposed, that there were strengths and weaknesses, you know? And I would just say in general, you know, my time covering all this, most of these kids, and it's no disrespect, I mean, they're just, especially as freshmen, they're just never as good as they're touted to be, as they're expected to be. It doesn't mean, by the way, 2-3 years down the road as an NBA player, they can't get there, but there just aren't that many Cade Cunninghams. There just aren't that many, Paolo's this year is a good example. There's one or two of those guys every year. And so that's kind of the intriguing part to me is one, the element of, you hate to be cliche, but is there any, does he not love basketball? Why wasn't he playing? But then two, were the adults in the room sitting there saying, if he actually goes out there, he's going to hurt his draft stock and have to come back for another year at Kentucky, kind of do that traditional freshman year the way that we expect. So that would be kind of the fascinating part to me, but that is why the mystery is so intriguing.
Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is also brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto gives you options when there usually are none. There's so many makes and so many models of vehicles, and it's really impossible for your local chain auto parts store or dealership to carry all the parts that you need. And normally, if they do carry the part, it's one set part, one set brand, one set price point. You have no negotiation power. You have no options. RockAuto.com gives you options. You can spend or save 30, 50, or even 100% more with rockauto.com than you would spending money at your local auto parts store or dealership. For example, you can get a Honda Odyssey fuel pump for $353 from a chain store, only $216 from Rock Auto. They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for every customer, and they have everything that you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. They have it all. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there, how did you hear about us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. The daily flip-flop for me on my board right now is Ivy in front of Sharp, in front of, and then Sharp overtakes Ivy. And for me, Keegan Murray is above both of them on my board right now. It's not the most popular opinion, at least right now, in Sacramento. But Sharp is the one that, at least on draft lottery night, as soon as you saw the Kings move up to four, almost every mock had the Kings taking Jaden Ivy. It's like, this is the pick at number four, most likely. Another fit versus talent question. I see the upside. I see the athleticism, the burst, the excitement, the flash, the flair, the speed, and the idea of Fox and Ivy and the fast break together makes you salivate. But everything else, the not necessarily concern, but the unknown about his ability as a floor spacer, an outside shooter. He is ball dominant in his own way. And De'Aaron Fox just went through a season where he played terribly next to Tyrese Halliburton and then averaged nearly 30 points a game after Tyrese was gone. Like there's questions there. So again, fit versus best talent available. Do you think Fox and Ivy could work together? Because you talked about earlier, like a Morant situation. If the Grizzlies somehow were in the Kings spot, they probably would avoid Ivy because they already have John Morant, who Ivy is closely compared to. Do you think that should be a concern for Sacramento, or based off of like talent and upside, he should definitely be on the Kings radar?
He should be on the Kings' radar. Now, whether they should draft him if he's available, especially if the first three goes as planned, you know, Matt, I have to default to you in terms of the De'Aaron Fox element of it. But Jaden Ivey's one that I do think, you know, he's to me probably the biggest boom or bust guy just from this perspective. Is I don't think he's going to be like a bust, but as you said, the three-point percentages went down over the course of the season. It did worry me a little bit that, you know, there were times where he could take over games and just didn't. I mean, they lost to St. Peter's in the Sweet 16, and St. Peter's is a great story, but you're the only NBA player on that floor. You got to take over that game, and he just didn't. But there also is that athleticism, that burst, the Ja Morant athleticism and freakish leaping ability, that is real. And so as far as a fit with the Kings, like I said, I'll defer to you. But what I would also say is, I know you kind of said him versus Shaedon Sharpe. What I would ask you is, you know, I think it's always easier to go with the unknown, but I'll defend, and I'm not trying to be the guy that loves college basketball, but, you know, Shaedon Sharpe's obviously 19 years old, so he's what he should have been a college freshman this year. And I think my question would be, if you're comparing the two, would he be in a year what Jaden Ivey is now? And that, I don't know. Now, that doesn't mean over the next 7 to 10 to 15 years, it can't be a different deal, but I do think it's always easy to defer to the unknown. And I do think it's also, by the way, easy to pick apart the guys that we have, you know, 60, 70 college games on. You know, NBA scouts obviously have access to some Team USA stuff that Jaden Ivey was a part of last summer. So we're talking about now probably 90 to 100 games between his freshman year, Team USA, sophomore year. And I also do think that becomes part of it as well, as you just have more time to pick apart stuff. And you just – you know, you kind of, you know, I don't know what the right word is, not overlook, but you just start to over-evaluate or second guess or whatever. And by the way, this happens in college with recruiting as well. I mean, I talk to coaches all the time. That kid was right in your backyard. How did you miss him? Well, you know, we just, you know, we recruited him for 3 years, or we recruited his high school teammate and we saw him all the time. And we just, you know, we just saw him too much where we started picking him apart. And so with Jaden Ivey, like I said, I see both sides. There was some concerns from me, but the raw tools and athleticism and leaping ability and all that stuff is obviously something that can't be replicated by not only many guards in this draft, but in the NBA in general.
I think to your point too, sometimes, and I don't necessarily always understand this, if you see someone who has multiple years in college versus a freshman one and done, that's sometimes held against the guy who stayed multiple years. It's certainly held against Keegan Murray, who's 21 years old, because they're not as young as these guys. So their NBA careers might not be as long.
Let me jump in on that. Like, as an example, Chet is a year old for a college freshman, right? Mm-hmm. And so Paolo was born, you know, Paolo could have been draft eligible last year, so he'll be 20 this year as well, right? And so, like, there's this idea that, oh, you know, Chet, so much upside, untapped. And, like, I certainly think that's there. I would venture to guess, without having looked at all the birthdays and stuff, there's probably sophomore guys that just finished their sophomore year that are younger than Chet in terms of years. But because of the fact that Chet was at some point held back a year or whatever, you know, I think there's this belief of, oh, he's just a little baby. Wait till we get him in the weight room. Wait till we do this. Wait till we do that. I think he's already 20 years old. I think I could be wrong on the birthdays. I don't want to be quoted on this. I mean, I will be quoted on this because it's a live podcast. But you know what I'm saying is, like, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know Chet's older for a year. I think Jabari is actually the age of what a freshman should be. So he'll be 19 at some point this year, as opposed to Paolo and Chet, who are a year older. And I think sometimes that gets factored in as well. I remember probably about 3 or 4 years ago, when they really started to open up a lot of these high school events for NBA scouts. NBA scouts have been banned from high school stuff for years, except for the McDonald's game. I remember being at an event and talking to a buddy of mine who was a scout, a little bit older. You know, it was a big gym, 3 or 4 games going on at a time, and he was pretty overwhelmed. And he's like, well, tell me about this kid. Well, tell me about that kid. And I said, well, that kid's good, but that kid is a year older. And, you know, and he goes, don't tell me about their age. I just need to know, like, and I'm like, but that matters. That matters that kid is a year older, you know, from an actual age perspective than that kid that we're comparing him to right there. And so I think that's part of, again, all of the stuff that goes into, you know, stuff that kind of gets overlooked at times like this.
Yeah, Chet is 20. Jabari Smith Jr. is 19, to your point. So you got it right on the head. The last question that I got for you, Aaron, is, outside of all these names that we've talked about, or maybe one of these names is going to be the answer to this question, but is there like a sleeper or a guy that in your mind is like not necessarily a can't miss or type prospect, but someone that you think when we look back 5 years from now or 10 years from now on the 2022 NBA draft, it's one of those names that maybe isn't at the top, maybe not the rookie of the year, maybe the best out of the draft class, but when you're redrafted, this guy's maybe making a pretty big jump.
Yeah, the guy that jumps out to me, and it's not like a crazy hot take, but I do like I really do like Ben Mathurin from Arizona. First of all, the film pops, you can see it. Size, length, athleticism, all that stuff. But the other thing that I really respect about him is I remember really after not this past college basketball season, but the one before. So the 2021 season, Arizona wasn't eligible for the tournament. And kind of during the tournament, I'm reaching out to a couple people I know over there, kind of just asking them, you know, like, what's the deal with this kid? Is he going to go pro? I'm starting to kind of look at what the 2022 college basketball season could look like. This was before Sean Miller and his staff were let go. And I said, you know, Ben Mathurin, like you guys think you'll have him back next year? They're like, oh, he's coming back. And so why I think it's important is because knowing some guys on the old staff that worked with him as a freshman and then guys on this past staff that worked with him as a sophomore and being around him a little bit, I caught a game out there. I was out in Tucson for about 3 or 4 days during the season. You know, very self-aware. And what I really respect about him is in this world that we live in, especially a year ago when NIL was kind of uncertain and how much money are you really going to make? You know, he was a kid that decided pretty early on, I know I'm not ready for the pros. I'm going to pump the brakes. I'm going to come back. I'm going to be a sophomore. I could probably get drafted. I could probably be a second rounder and get some guaranteed money, but I know that I'm not ready. And then on top of knowing that he wasn't ready, came back, worked his butt off, and put himself in a position to go from somewhere in the second round, two-way contract, whatever, to a top 15 pick, a lottery pick. I don't know where he's going to go, but that just sticks with me is the self-awareness to kind of be like, okay, I can get some money now, but I can see the how much value one more year of college is going to do for me. That stuck with me. We saw him evolve into a star this year. Not saying that he will be a star. To your point, Matt, I'm not saying take him ahead of Paolo or Jabari Smith or even Jaden Ivey, but to the question that you asked of when we look up 5-6 years from now, could he be a guy that, you know, should have gone third instead of ninth or should have gone fourth instead of 14th? I think that's the guy that jumps out to me.
Aaron, having you on during draft season is an absolute treat, my friend. Thank you so much for being willing to do this again. I hope next year to have you back on, but hopefully the Kings will be in a position where maybe they're not talking about a lottery pick next year. Maybe they'll finally make the playoffs, but one can dream, right?
I have told other Kings media, you know, it's both a blessing and a not blessing because I always know it's draft time. I get a million requests from Sacramento. I'm always grateful to do everything that I can for you guys. But it's also because you guys are picking at the top of the draft every year. So, you know, my thoughts, my prayers are that next year you bring me on and say, Torres, we just made the play-in. We advanced to the main bracket. Who is the guy to fill the piece to get us to that next level? Who do we need to take at 16 this year? Tell us about the 16th best player in the draft instead of the second or third best player in the draft. That's my hope for everyone in Sacramento and anybody that follows the Kings. I give you guys credit. I know it's been a long time, but good things are ahead.
Huge thank you to Aaron again for joining me here on Locked On Kings. It's an absolute pleasure to have him on, especially this time of the year. He's super, super busy. So for him to make out time to come here on Locked On Kings really is a treat. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you have anything you want to talk about from that interview, especially in regards to like Shaedon Sharpe's background or the best player versus best fit conversation, whatever you want to chime in on, please let me know at Matt George Sack on Twitter. Email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com, or leave your thoughts in the YouTube comment section down below. And like I said earlier, Aaron is not going to be the last national draft analyst that we have here on the Locked On Kings podcast this week. Rafael Barlow from NBA Big Board and the Locked On NBA Draft podcast, he is going to be joining me again here this week. Very excited to have him back on to talk about all these prospects and more. I'm also going to be joined for the first time ever by a Bleacher Report draft analyst, Jonathan Wasserman. He will be joining me this week as well. And separate from the draft, taking a bit of a break from the draft, I have currently scheduled, and hopefully we'll be able to make it work, Bobby Jackson, former Sacramento Kings Sixth Man of the Year, Kings legend, and currently the head coach of the Stockton Kings. He is set to join me at the end of this week as well. He was just in Chicago for the draft combine, so he'll be able to give us perspective on that. Plus, we'll talk about his first year at the helm of the Stockton Kings and what he noticed about players like Nemias Keita coaching them. Very excited to have Bobby here on Locked On Kings for the first time in a while we've had him on. So hopefully I'm able to make that work at the end of this week. So that's all the Locked On content coming for you this week. We're keeping this ball rolling, trying to make sure you get all the content that you both want and deserve here during draft time and during the offseason. Really appreciate your support as always. Cannot wait to have you back with me on the next episode of Locked On Kings. Before we go,
If you weren't aware, currently we're doing a giveaway. All we have to do, or all you have to do, is get Locked On Kings over 350 reviews on Apple Podcasts. And right now we're like at 320 or 321, something like that. So we get around 30 more. And I will be buying a pair of opening night tickets for the Sacramento Kings this season in the Golden One Center this upcoming season. And I will be giving them away to a Locked On Kings listener. All we have to do is get above 350 reviews to make that happen. I know that we can do it. Thank you to all of you who have left reviews. Again, you go to Apple Podcasts, create a quick account. There's a little box for you to leave a blurb about what you like about the podcast, why you'd encourage others to listen to Locked On Kings. If you could fill that out, hit 5 stars too. That would be incredible. And I look forward to buying tickets and treating a couple Kings fans out there to the Kings home opener in the Golden One Center. So please make sure you get that done, and I look forward to treating somebody out there. And again, join me on the next episode of Locked On Kings. Cannot wait for that. Until then, my name is Matt George. You have been listening to Locked On Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.